Greetings and salutations, true believers. Welcome to Breaking the Panel, where we are going to bring you the latest in exciting nerd stuff. And today I am joined by none other than Brian Ibbett and Epic boss Charles McFall. And we're going to talk about some super sweet stuff.
The comic book now owns pop culture, and that's a worldwide phenomenon. Film, television, literature, even music. These days, it's all about the comics.
I am Arrow.
I'm Batman.
Supergirl?
What does S.H.I.E.L.D. stand for, Agent Ward?
I am Iron Man.
And I am Spider-Man.
Hulk. Smash.
We're living the comics life. We're breaking the panel.
Brian, you want to tell us what we're going to talk about today?
I will tell you what we're going to be talking about today. Headlines? I'm doing headlines. We're going to be talking about, Dr. Strange's Benedict Cumberbatch images have finally surfaced. We've all taken a look at those. We'll say what we think. We've watched a couple of Deadpool trailers, red and green varieties for Christmas. We'll talk about that. And a couple other things. The X-Force movie lineup possibly has been revealed. We'll talk about whether or not we agree with our choices or whether we're hoping for somebody else. And X-23 taking the Wolverine mantle. We'll talk about that as well. Let's get into the first topic here, which is our first look at Benedict Cumberbatch as Doctor Strange from the upcoming Marvel film. Upcoming, it's like, you know, just under a year away, but obviously, they're beginning principal filming on that, and seeing the whole costume thing. You know, we've known that Doctor Strange is going to be played by Benedict Cumberbatch for a while, but kind of seeing the whole the whole costume thing, kind of cool.
Yeah, it looks really great. Does. I mean, I knew he felt like the perfect person to play this role, just with his mannerisms and the things that I've seen. I've seen other things other than Sherlock. He was in a show with Hugh Laurie for a while, and yeah, I thought he'd be perfect for this. And yeah, the look, man, when they posted this magazine cover, was it
Entertainment Weekly?
EW? Yep. Yeah, mm-hmm. Entertainment Weekly. Yeah,
it is really cool. Little special effects in there to give him the powers, right. And he's got the eye of Agamotto. Is it Agamotto? Yeah, eye of Agamotto on there. Yep. Really?
Yeah, I love the article that we're pulling this from. I love the tweet that was shared. Cloak, check. Blue tunic, check. Eye of Agamotto, check. By the hoary hosts of Hogoth, this is hashtag Doctor Strange come to life.
So true. And here's the interesting thing. At least from what we're seeing here, there's not a MCU modernization of the costume. It looks like it's straight out of the Steve Ditko artwork bin.
Yeah.
You know, the blue tunic with the big red cape or cloak. Okay, red cloak, if I'm going to go by what Meredith Placo says below. But it's very, very true to the way the comic book looks. And this might be the closest costume-wise, other than maybe the Black Panther, which is, you can't stray too far from the formula. Yeah. I know there's some silver elements on the one that they've shown for Civil War, but this might be the closest costume wise we've gotten to the comic book character for a Marvel character. Well, all right, Hulk. I guess I forgot about Hulk. Green, purple pants again.
But you're talking about the level of costume. And Iron Man's a crutch, right? Because he has 50,000
right, exactly. So having him, you know, we never really saw the 70s Iron Man in true realized form. We did see a newer version of the Iron Man suit brought to life in the costume. Of course, the original Iron Man suit. But this looks really true to the comics. Mm.
Yeah, and this one is probably one of the more difficult ones to do, you'd think, with all the colors and layers. And it's not just that. I couldn't help but notice his belt. His belt is amazing. And for something like that, it makes me realize, oh, I took in more of the character than I thought on the page. Because I could tell you, if you told me to describe Doctor Strange, I could tell you about the amulet. I could tell you about the cloak, you know, the colors. But that jumped out at me. It's like, oh, maybe I could, you know, I've taken in more. And, you know, as a happily married straight man, he is sexy as hell. In that picture, I mean, look at it. It was like,
He is. Sure, Benedict Cumberbatch is a good looking dude.
Many of the women.
If you follow that link, by the way, there's a link in the article there that I've linked you to. There's a total of 6 photos, one of them being the inside of Doctor Strange's lair, the Arcane. What is it? It's not the obviously not Arcane Asylum. Or is it the Arcane Asylum?
It's something like that. It's because it's the house.
Right, exactly.
Right?
And I don't want to confuse it with.
He has to let you in.
With Batman.
Arkham Asylum.
The Arcane Asylum is Doctor Strange's lair. And then you've got this really trippy Guardians of the Galaxy-esque nowhere kind of image that they've included as part of this. It's it's going to be something cool, the direction that they take this. I'm really excited to see this.
Yeah, I am too. I was a little worried about the MCU embracing or not embracing, as it might be, the case might be, of the mysticism and the mystical aspects of Marvel. That also is another reason why he's such a great cast for it, because anybody who would normally go, magic in comic books, that don't make sense, they're going to get over it because it's Sherlock Holmes. And go, oh, okay. Khan.
Right, exactly.
Khan.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, you didn't say that right. So. It's Khan!
Yeah.
Oh, man. Okay, so with Star Trek, spoilers, if you haven't seen Star Trek Into Darkness, you're way behind and, you know, get off the show. You shouldn't be even talking to us. You're dirt. But no, I'm sorry. You guys are supposed to stop me at that point.
No,
you failed in your job.
There's a point at which we step back and say, I'm not going to step in front of this moving train. You? No.
You just let me crash right into that wall. Thank you. But, you know, I knew seeing the trailers went, if this isn't Wrath of Khan reboot, then this is going to be a crappy movie, because I could see all the markers. And I thought it was perfectly done from the previews. My friend went to see it before I did, Star Trek Into Darkness, and... I said, tell me, is it Khan? Oh, no, it's whatever his character name in the very first one, he's the terrorist, right? John Anderson or something like, no, it's not. And I went to see him, like, why couldn't you? I literally asked you a specific question. Why couldn't you answer? Well, I didn't want to spoil it. Really? I know what it is. There's no spoiler to that.
There is. No,
right?
No,
if you
I
didn't
disagree.
Know that was Khan.
I think that there is. I think going into Star Trek Into Darkness, knowing that Benedict Cumberbatch's character is Khan, I think it sets you up to like look for those parallels before that element is revealed.
I mean, I guess if you're not looking for it, I'll give you that. But I was absolutely, as soon as I saw the first preview, I'm like, this is Khan. There's no way this is not Khan. And I loved it for that. And I was looking for the things and I enjoyed it. I guess I'm a fan of the J.J. Abrams reboot and looking forward to the next Star Trek.
Blasphemer! Sure.
No, I'm kidding. I agree. But no, really. Blasphemer.
That was awesome. But getting back to this, I know how you guys feel, but because I think you're the same as me. You're loving it, Doctor Strange. The mystical aspects are great. How do you think the general public is going to respond to this?
I think that Guardians of the Galaxy and even Ant-Man have proven that if you slap Marvel on something and it is done well, people will come.
Yeah.
I think the star power of Benedict Cumberbatch is enough that people will come. I would say that there is more star power packed into him, especially in the overseas audience, than there was in Ant-Man, even with the greats that they had involved in that. So I think that this has every chance to be a smash success. And I think it has every chance to give this character an opportunity that I don't think it might have had with different casting. I was reading in that Entertainment Weekly article that we're linked to here with the photos. Kevin Feige said that they'd been looking at Benedict for a long time. And they weren't sure it was going to work out because he's been getting more and more popular. He's been getting busier and busier.
Right.
And his schedule has just been, you know, tough to work around. And then finally they made the decision where they're like, well, we're going to try to work around Benedict's schedule. You know, we're going to try to make this work with Benedict. I think that says a lot. I mean, Marvel is not, you know, a small player in Hollywood anymore. They are probably one of the biggest now, especially with the backing of Disney. And I think that for them to choose somebody like this and say, well, you know, we can't really, we're going to, you're the guy. We're going to make it work with your schedule. That says a lot. That's a really big commitment to an individual. And I think that's fantastic. And I think that's what's really going to give this new franchise legs is having him attached to it. However, it does, you know, introduce the difficulty of keeping him, you know, in the bullpen, if you will, going forward. Like, I mean, it's going to be, does he start to prioritize Marvel over his other projects or not? Because, you know, he strikes me as the kind of artist who is going to follow the art. You know, I'm sure money is a factor for him, but he's done some projects where recently that were fantastic projects that weren't as high profile as some of his other work. So you can tell that, you know, paycheck alone is not his, you know, main motivator. So I do worry a little bit about that because I would love to see the character continue to pop up in the rest of the MCU.
In the other movies. Sure. Yeah.
So.
Well, here's the great thing about him being Doctor Strange is even in the comics. Now, of course, in his own comic, he's in it all the time. But in the Defenders and into the Avengers and any other comic, they have to go hunt him down and ask for his help. So he's not always around. And even in Civil War, his role was to basically astroplane and get away from everything and pray that the right outcome happens.
Kind of.
That was it. And they made a point of that. The Watcher spoke to him like, what are you doing? He's like, well, you know, I can't affect this one way or the other. I have to rise above it. And, you know, hopefully the right thing will happen. And essentially he was fasting, I think it was. He wasn't even eating till this ended. And I thought it was a very nice aspect of that character. And the fact that you take somebody as busy as Benedict is and you write him to that kind of character, that means he's kind of the same way, right? We can't always get Benedict into the universe. So let's make sure when we do it right.
So, yeah, no, I think this definitely has legs. It has a major opportunity here. It's going to bring in that crossover demographic, as a studio executive might put it. It's going to bring in a lot of the lady folk who are into Benedict Cumberbatch.
They may not know the first thing about comic books or care, but they they'll ooh and ah over them. And maybe, who knows, maybe start liking the comic after that.
Yeah. How many people have picked up comic books because of the MCU in the last few years? I mean, we know that it's been plenty. Mm-hmm. We know that not everybody who shows up for these films are comic book fans per se. I absolutely believe that this has every chance to do very well, to bring in a lot of people who might not normally show up for a comic book film. Though, I mean, that crowd has to be getting increasingly smaller at this point, right? We've got to have reached the point where with the success of both Avengers films and all the other films surrounding them, that we now can accept that these movies are pretty good and they're worth going to see, even if you're not the biggest comic book fan, right? Like, I think most people are pretty much on board with that. So unless you have like a bone to pick with comic books or comic book films, you're probably going to go see at least one of these MCU movies at some point. So why not this one, you know?
Right. Yeah, and I think, you know, mentioning Guardians of the Galaxy a minute ago, that certainly greased the wheel for the non-traditional, for the, for the for something as far out as this is going to be, is probably the sugar that would make something like mysticism and magic like this a lot easier to swallow. So I think thank goodness for the order that they're doing these things in, because I think had they done this prior to Guardians of the Galaxy, it may not do well. It may not have been received as well.
The other thing that has paved the road for Strange is Thor. You know, they've already addressed the fact that the Asgardian magic is just advanced technology and science that we don't understand.
Right, right.
You know, we see it as magic. They see it as advanced science and technology. So I think people accepted that immediately. They're like, okay, I like that explanation. That's fine. Mysticism is going to be something similar. You know, it's going to be like, well, this is just a bit beyond your normal understanding. There's still, because the thing that's always struck me about mysticism and magic systems in fantasy and sci-fi is that ultimately they're always presented generally presented, not always presented, usually presented as being methodical, and that you have to become learned and that you have to, you know, be rigorous in your application of technique and methodology in order to produce the results that you want. I mean, that's what the whole basis of Harry Potter was. You know, as much as that's a kid's fantasy story, there's a lot of rhyme and reason in it. You know, there's a lot of straightforward, like they're going to school to learn how to be wizards because there's a right way to do things and a wrong way. And you know, you get bad results when you don't do things the right way. So I think people are ready to accept that, you know, and that it's maybe just a different take on stuff that we're familiar with. So I think that'll be fine. If he was just like, you know, conjuring up fire or something like that, I mean, that's already like a mutant power. So they'd just be like, oh, that's a mutant power, whatever kind of thing. But I mean, it's, they're going to show him being methodical. I mean, the article mentions Benedict like kind of obsessing over like the hand movements and all that kind of stuff. He's like, because he's like, they don't have the special effects yet, you know. So he's like, are people going to be looking at my finger movements and arrangements and stuff like that and looking for like, you know, exceptions or not doing it right, that kind of stuff. So he's a little nervous about it, understandably so, because some, there will be some, you know, basement dweller out there who is like, your
that's not how that's supposed to work.
Yeah. Your thumb was in the wrong position. And, you know, but yeah, no, I think people will accept it. We've already established that they can, you know, through stuff like Guardians of the Galaxy, through Thor with the magic system there. I think
even
it's
Ant-Man.
Be
yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, come on. Ant-Man very much borderlines on quantum physics, you know, like getting into the really abstract, mostly theoretical aspect of science that, as an educated person myself, I find it really hard to wrap my head around sometimes. So yeah, whatever you're going to show me on the screen, I'm with you guys. I believe you. I hope that has some basis in science, because I don't know.
I'm just gonna shrug my shoulders and say we're running with it, whatever that is. I believe it. Yeah.
Yep.
Well, you know, that really boils down to the line from Stan Lee, true believers.
Yeah,
right. You do have to stretch imagination sometimes, but I like that the suspension of belief, or the suspension of disbelief, if you will, it is not such a huge leap in these Marvel films for any reason. And it helps to put flashy, cool effects around it as well to distract you from it. And fun, good dialogue and character development are all important, and that's why these have done well. I mean, that's why currently Marvel/Disney can do no wrong. You know, I think this is going to be so much fun, and I really hope it paves the way for the other areas of Marvel that are fringe-esque. When I heard that Iron Fist was going to have his own Netflix series, I'm like, really? Because I like it, I dig it, but I kind of see that being, out of all the Netflix series announced, that's going to be the hardest one.
That's going to be the big. This film is going to be the thing that paves the way for Iron Fist, though, because Iron Fist is the kung fu merged with mysticism, and it's a huge part of it. And those characters have a lot of overlap, so we could hope for stuff like, you know, Cumberbatch appearing in a show like Iron Fist, which as Strange, which would be fantastic, because that would be the perfect kind of like crossover for him, where he doesn't have to commit a lot of time. You know, he might have to free up a week or two here or there to make an appearance, and he could still have a great impact. And they're often involved with each other in the comic books, because they both have the basis in mysticism. Iron Fist is going to be super amazing. I mean, I can't wait.
That's supposed to come out before, right? That's supposed to come out before Doctor Strange, because Doctor Strange is until November.
Are we actually going to have it in time? Because is Iron Fist going to be out next year, or is it the following year?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I don't know. They
because I don't even know that. Because, they delayed Iron Fist because they weren't sure they were going to do it. And then Jessica Jones was, you know, just awesome, you know, really successful. I don't think it beat out Daredevil on viewership, but I think it's successful with different crowds and, you know, got a different viewership, which is a great thing. Which is fine. I mean, I've noticed some people, without veering too much into talking about Jessica Jones specifically, but I've noticed how some people who were huge fans of Daredevil were like, oh, Jessica Jones wasn't really my thing. That's the beauty of it, is that each of these Netflix shows are going to scratch a slightly different itch. So if you like all of them, you're going to be over the moon. Like, I just, I love all of it. But if you're really not into something like Jessica Jones, well, then you're going to have Daredevil. You're going to have Luke Cage. You're going to, you know, soon here, hopefully have Iron Fist. So there will be options. I mean, I'm really hoping that Iron Fist gets to be this really amazing, like, in the legacy of Bruce Lee kung fu films, where, like, there's a little bit of mysticism, there's a little bit of mystery, there's a lot of, like, posturing and everything. I'm really hoping that we get to see a lot of that, but then with the modern twists and edge and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, these are going to be complementary to each other and possibly produce crossover opportunities as well. So really, really exciting.
Yeah, I can't find anything that says when their target release date for Iron Fist is. So it could certainly happen after. They're still apparently doing the casting for Iron Fist. So
yeah, well, it's gonna be tough to find the right person for that role, you know.
Right.
It's gotta be somebody with the physicality as well as the personality. Mm-hmm. So yeah, exciting stuff.
Well, moving on to our next topic here, and speaking of finding the right character for the role, new Deadpool trailer brings more mutants, mayhem, and of course, jokes. Just when you thought Ryan Reynolds' Deadpool couldn't break the superhero movie mold anymore than it already has, another set of trailers make it clear that the mouthy mercenary's irreverent solo debut is just getting started. On Christmas, we get a couple of new trailers for Deadpool, a red and green band version of the film with Reynolds as the foul-mouthed, ultra-violent anti-hero. And it's going to be a very interesting take. He even, you know, breaks that fourth wall more than once in the trailer, talking about how, what, this is a superhero movie? Yet you're seeing me skewer this guy like a kebab? How is this possible? And I love this. I love this because the comic did that exact same thing where it broke the fourth wall all the time. And to not do that with the movie seems like it would be a disservice to the character. Absolutely. So it's and of course, there, like you said, there's a red band version and a green band version. So prepare for lots of F-bombs and gore in the red band version. That was the first one I saw, and I didn't see the.
Oh, that's the only one I saw.
Yeah, the green one. I think the green one had a couple different things that I didn't remember from the red one, but really cool. I am so looking forward to this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, oh, my God.
This movie needs to be successful because it needs to prove that a hard R has a place. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure.
I mean.
Oh, you know. We're gonna go at least four times in opening weekend. Right now, this is the movie I've been waiting for all of my life. I'm with you. It needs to show. You're right. It needs to show that the hard R does have a place, and it's a very limited place. But if you didn't do a hard R on Deadpool, you couldn't do the Deadpool movie, in my opinion. You know, it's. I did notice something else though from the previous trailer to this trailer. There's a scene where he's about to get his powers, and the guy walks off, and he's like, "Hey, don't leave me with." And I forget what the original line was, but you know they take multiple takes of these things. Well, because the original line struck me as really funny. I can't, emo Ryan Seacrest, I think was the line. But in this trailer is "Don't leave me with," and he calls her something different. And I was like, "Oh, that's fun. You're playing with the different cuts." In the trailers, and whether you meant to or not, you know, fans like us will pick up on it. But I thought it was, Ryan Reynolds is just that mouthy guy anyway. He always plays that character, so I'm sure he has a really great impromptu way of saying things.
Well, for example, the scene from the trailer where he takes his mask off for Weasel, who's played by T.J. Miller.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, exactly. Apparently, they did improv on that scene a bunch of times. And TJ Miller just kept shouting at them. He's like, "No, let's go again. Let's go again. I got more. Let's go again. I got another one. Let's go." Awesome. You know, because he's somebody who has an improv background and is a comedian, you know, a comedian and an actor. So I think there was probably a fair amount of that, like, all right, let's really play with this and find the best stuff. And some of that best stuff might come in from off script, you know? Mm-hmm. I can't wait for the DVD or Blu-ray or whatever you want to call it. You know what I mean?
Not only can you not wait to watch it, you can't wait to see the bonus stuff that comes from it.
Oh, exactly.
6 months later.
Exactly.
I mean, I'm totally with you. Exactly. It would be awesome if they would do, during the credits, like they would show some of the alternative outtakes. You know what I mean?
Oh, right. Yeah.
You know how like some comedy films do? It would be great if they did that during the credits, keep people in there a little longer. Yes. But yeah, like I'm super excited for this. I've long thought that Reynolds needed an opportunity to redeem himself after X-Men Wolverine Origins.
Mm-hmm.
Because
and the sad part is it's not even really him redeeming himself, because it was the there's no way, I don't think that was Ryan Reynolds doing the stunt work with the facial thing over. So the only time you see Ryan Reynolds, he's doing a great job as Deadpool. It's when they changed Deadpool so fundamentally drastically from who he was as a character that Ryan Reynolds is completely erased from that character, both literally and figuratively. Right. And this will be the greatest redemption of all time.
Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. He gets held for that. But well, like, one, he wasn't Deadpool. He was Wade Wilson.
He gets held which is for different. Green Lantern a lot, too.
Well, so, okay.
But again, that's not him. Is. That was the writing and the direction. No, I mean, it's the right. I don't think it was his fault. I think he
I don't disagree with you, but he's still got to redeem himself in the eyes of most comic book fans, you know?
Well, yes. I mean, I've heard that come up a lot with the Deadpool thing. I was like, but my argument is Green Lantern was a cash grab. It was overly graphiced out. I don't know if there's even a word for what I'm trying to say there, but it's all heavy duty CGI, way that's too like much the CGI. Only... They didn't let him do what he did best, which is mouth off to people. I mean, he did it minimally in this thing, which is Hal Jordan mouths off all the time.
See, I actually haven't seen his Green Lantern film yet. And it's something I want to see because at the time when it came out, I wasn't a Green Lantern fan. So I really couldn't have like weighed it properly, but now I am. Mm-hmm. And so like, I totally want to see it now. And though I know it'll probably be horrific because I've heard bad things.
Well, it's like watching Old Yeller. You know you're going to cry. And not because the movie's sad in this case. It's because I was a fan of Ryan Reynolds and Green Lantern, and both got shot.
You know what,
film.
Though? I don't think Ryan Reynolds was the problem with the movie, with Green Lantern.
No.
Well, I mean,
absolutely
he's proven
not.
That he's an accomplished actor. I mean, pretty much any movie he's been in, he is good in for this. You know, like what's that movie he did with Sandra Bullock, the romantic comedy? That was actually a great movie because he was hilarious. And like, I was like, okay, this is a rom-com that I can get behind because he is genuinely entertaining the entire time. Mm-hmm. There were, there's been a few other films that like aren't necessarily my kind of cup du jour, if you will. Mm-hmm. But he has definitely elevated a lot of them. He is somebody who is just like, I mean, that TV show back in the day, Two Guys,
yeah, and
that show probably would not have persisted as long as it did, despite getting canceled eventually, if not for him. I mean, he was really the lifeblood of that show. So he is someone who has shown that he's capable, and I think he can carry it. And the interesting part about this film is, he's not going to be able to get by on it, like him, his look, you know, his good looks and everything, because they're only going to last so long.
Right.
You know, it's really gonna,
It's
really
going
to come down to his performance and his personality, which is great. Cause I think I would like to think that a lot of actors who genuinely care about the craft would like the opportunity to do that, you know, to really let their mm-hmm. skills shine outside of just being, you know, the heartthrob face of a film that a lot of these guys get stuck with, you know? Mm-hmm. So.
And would you guys agree that I believe the 9 times out of 10 that you see the suit on screen, he's in that suit?
So I think when you see it as a real suit and not CGI, because there's times in the trailer you can say, all right, I think I'm looking at a CGI suit. I think so.
I think he is for most of the static scenes. I don't think he is for a lot of the stunt work.
Yeah.
So like the scenes where he's talking, but of course the suit mm-hmm. covers the mouth, but the body language and how he delivers the line, it seems like that's him in the suit delivering mm-hmm. the line, because the body language matches how he does things. And I hope if it is voiceover, it's really good, because the actions
with
really
the mouth,
line up
the
with
movements
the delivery
of the
line,
right of the trailer, the mask too, right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, moving beyond the awesomeness that is Ryan Reynolds, and before we do that, really quick, if you want to know to see him with some serious gravitas and serious acting, I think the movie is called Nine. I think it was called Nine, but it's about God and religion and death, and is an indie film, I want to say.
Is that the Italian one
really,
from a few
really
years
good
ago?
He is, Maybe. I couldn't tell you who, where it came from or who did it. But he really, really, he can do some great serious acting is all I'm saying. I'm pretty sure it's called The Nine or Nine, something like that. I remember it's back in the days of Blockbuster still being around. I should tell you.
Oh,
here
we go. The Nines, 2007.
Yeah, that's that was it's really existential. It's really out there, but he acts it so well. He does so well. And there's no quips, no good. He's not getting by on his good looks. He's not getting by on his one-liners. It's not funny at all. But it's really, really well done.
That was and, a very confusing film.
But yeah, if you really want to appreciate how
it was really good, but it was very confusing. It's an art film, I mean, to pretty much to the max.
Yes. Yeah, and it's supposed to, I think it's designed to make you question your thoughts on life, reality, and religion, and those kind of things. So, really loved it. I thought it was a great movie. But moving on beyond him, once I got past my squeeing excitement of him skewering people and dropping the F-bombs and the dirty jokes and all this other stuff, then they bring in the best Colossus I've ever seen in my life. Like, oh, yes, this is Foxy after X-Men. Oh, my God. He's like, don't bring that X crap to me. It's like, oh, my
BS,
God.
BS, I think is the word he uses.
Yeah, he doesn't even swear. Like, don't bring that X-Men BS to me. And I did not recognize the females accompanying either side. But it's so cool.
The one that punches him is Gina Carano.
Okay. Is the character name or actress?
The actress?
Okay. No, the UFC fighter, former UFC fighter.
Yeah. No, I don't recognize the character.
She is. Hold on, I know who it is. It's in this article too.
Cause I saw it in an
Gina Carano is Angel Dust, and the girl that is with him is Negasonic Teenage Warhead.
Mm. See, I don't recognize either of those characters.
Well, good.
Which I'm very excited to
and
be.
And Marina Baccarin is Copycat.
Like oh, really? And R from Firefly. Cool.
And Ed's screen is Ajax. So if you don't recognize any of those names, you are a filthy casual.
I stepped into that one, but I don't. I'm very excited. See, that's why I love this kind of thing, that I get introduced to new characters and go dig into the Marvel Unlimited app and see if I can find stuff about them. But the scene was really great. She's texting on the phone. He's like mouthing off the Colossus, and he's like, oh, no, that's fine. Go ahead and finish your Twitter. It's fine. And then she tosses him the phone and does her big fire blast, whatever, and blasts Colossus three blocks away or whatever it is. He goes, oh, well, that was worth waiting for.
Yeah, I feel bad for your future prom date who tries to go further than you want to let him or something like that. Yeah.
Something like that, yeah. I'm so excited about – I love crossovers. I love – you know, in Iron Man, where in the Hulk, in the Incredible Hulk, where you see Iron Man in the Stinger, it's like, oh, this is a universe.
Yes,
they're doing that a little bit here, and
it's finally more than they were able to do with the Wolverine Origins films. I mean, you had Jean Grey in the most recent one, and really some sort of tie-ins with the young school for gifted mutants in the first one, which is so poorly, so ham-handedly done. That having it go this way, I think, is really, really cool. Now, that actually segues perfectly into our next article. The X-Force movie lineup possibly has been revealed.
I did not know
they
were doing it.
I didn't either until I saw this article. So in July of 2013, Jeff Wadlow, the director and writer of Kick-Ass 2, was hired by 20th Century Fox to pen the screenplay for an X-Force movie, which he'd possibly helm as well. Over the past 2 years, he's stated that his team would be a five-member lineup. His X-Force team would be made up of five members, and he never confirmed which characters it would consist of, but he did say that he was a fan of Deadpool, Wolverine, Cable, Psylocke, Domino, and Colossus.
I like that.
Based on
very
the
much.
Art below, and conceptual art has been released, which shows X-Force is including Cable, who's the team leader and son of Colossus, Domino, skilled marksman, hand-to-hand fighter with probability-altering powers, Warpath, who we saw in Days of Future Past, I believe, in the future scenes.
Yes.
Native American with super strength, heightened senses, Cannonball, who's a professor of jet propulsion. It does look like Professor when I was looking at this. Jet propulsion and force field abilities. And finally, Feral has kind of got a hood over there on the side. So no Deadpool, no Psylocke, no Wolverine, no Colossus, which is kind of a bummer after seeing the Colossus in the Deadpool trailer.
This is Fox, right? So this, unless they totally want to screw up everything they've ever done that's good. And give me a second here, Chris, before you start yelling at me in the chat. I get you. Before that cannot, because an article says perhaps it's Hope Summers or a toned-down version of Psylocke. It cannot be a toned-down version of Psylocke because they've already cast her in the next X-Men movie. Yeah, so then what I'm saying is what they would screw up is if you recast her and change the character, but you're owning the rights to the same movie, why would you go against yourself like that? Why would you not keep the same actors and the same type of character across the board? Like Warpath, we've already seen, he should be the same actor. Now, he wasn't as pivotal a character. It'd be okay to change the actor. But when you're talking about Olivia Munn in a big movie that will be a blockbuster, I mean, it's going to do well. And is this, Apocalypse. Was it officially called X-Men Armor? Is it
Apocalypse? Apocalypse? Yeah. And she's one of the four horsemen. Okay. So she's going to get screen time. Like, she's not going to be a throwaway.
Right.
So you'd be shooting yourself in the Fantastic Four foot. If you change that, I really do hope that it's Hope Summers, you know, or it's somebody else. But I like the idea of it being Hope Summers would be really cool. This looks like a video game.
It actually looks like action figures. I know, especially the Cable. It looks like it's ripped right from a statue.
Yeah, and it might be. This might be fan art.
Well, no, this is conceptual art from Gregory Semkow, who collaborated with the guy they're talking about, the director, Jeff Wadlow.
Oh, I do see that. It says it's Feral, not Hope Summers. Although Hope Summers would be cool. But yeah, it definitely can never be. That can't be Psylocke anymore.
So. Oh, no. That wouldn't be Psylocke. But.
Now, Warpath, because it's been a while since I saw Days of Future Past, and not Warpath, yes, he has super strength with heightened senses, but didn't he also have that teleport ability, or was that another character?
Warpath?
That
was Blink. No. Yeah,
that was Blink. Okay. They were side characters, and I was kind of mixing up what they were doing in the movie there. Sorry.
But, of course, okay, so kind of back to this, though. They only show four characters. He was saying that he'd want to have a five-person lineup, a five-member team. Mm-hmm. Who would you want to see as the fifth member of X-Force?
Clearly, it should be Deadpool.
Well, technically, I think that's
I take that back. To be Cannonball. Yeah, there is Cannonball far in the background there. Never mind. So we are seeing all five.
Yeah. I agree with Klotz.
I think it's crazy to not do an X-Force with some combination of Deadpool, Cable, Domino, and then maybe a couple other characters.
Right. Yeah. I'd feel like Wolverine had to be in there too because of the later stuff. I'm remembering when X-Force shot off of New Mutants, and it was kind of like the, you know, Shatterstar and Nitro. I'm trying to remember who else was part of that, but Sunspot. But I do like this darker, grittier, and I think, yeah, having Deadpool, especially if he's already established himself in his own solo film, having him lead a group like this, I think would be really cool.
I think having him appear in every Fox-owned mutant film from now on, just as a little cameo, like he does in the comics, would be amazing.
Deadpool versus X-Men. Deadpool versus Future Past.
I mean, don't make him a feature, but don't even say he's going to be in there. You know, X-Men 4, Days of Future, Apocalypse Comes, whatever. I don't know. Whatever they title the next movie. And, you know, in the background, you just see, it doesn't even have to be Ryan Reynolds, although that'd be awesome. You just see, you know, a Deadpool suit guy walking past, kind of look, wave at the camera.
Just there to kind of break the fourth wall. Perfect.
Am I the only one that thinks that this concept art we're looking at here doesn't look like a Resident Evil game?
No, I think you're not the only person who feels that way. I mean, you know, or Charles and I were both saying,
We're about to have warships and airplanes and stuff. It's a Tom Clancy's something X-Force.
Devil May Cry or something. Yeah. It looks pretty. But I strongly feel that you need those three characters to start telling the story, at least. You might not keep them if you're going to keep doing X-Force films. But X-Force is it's a gritty, you know, it's a gritty thing. It gives them an opportunity to do something akin to what they did with Daredevil compared to all the other MCU stuff, you know, like where with Daredevil it was, all right, this is gritty, violent, like really violent. You know, they're going to be able to do the same kind of thing with X-Force. I'm excited to see if it comes to fruition.
And to be honest, with the way Marvel is holding their properties, and they've said, what they say, they said that basically there will never be an R-rated Marvel film. Now, that may change in the future. We know, with especially movie studios and cultures and societies, never is not really never. But that is the path right now. They're owned by Disney. They're really still towing the line with Jessica Jones, but there is still a hard PG-13.
Oh, well, Daredevil, so definitely, if it was on... If it was to be rated normally, it would be an R.
It would be, but that's only because of the violence, you know, which is not what they're shying away from. I think they're shying away from nudity. They're shying away from hard cussing, which is fine. Yeah. But I right now don't foresee a hard R picture from Marvel, whereas Fox and FX, and you know, Fox, who owns the FX network, so it's known for their darker movies, darker TV shows, I can see them actually doing well with this style of film. That's all I'm saying.
Sure.
Yeah.
Way to bring the show down, filthy casual. Thank you. I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. You're welcome.
Shall we transition to our next point here? Because it kind of does tie into Deadpool and X-Force in a way. So I found an article that came across my desk about from Kotaku, of all places, about how X-23 is going to be the all-new Wolverine, meaning that she'll get the new Wolverine title. It's called All-New Wolverine, and she's assuming the mantle, so she'll have a costume that looks very much like the Wolverine that we're used to, you know, with the similar colors and shape and everything, which makes a lot of sense because she is a clone of Logan. What I found interesting from this article is they really talked about how it's going to be very interesting to watch X-23 deal with everything that Wolverine's had hundreds of years to deal with. For example, the compulsion to just be a mindless killing machine, you know, to allow instinct to take over. And, you know, Logan had a long time to really come to terms with that. And basically in the end of his run in the comics of recent memory, he's largely got that under control. He's usually pretty reasonable about who he's stabbing and shredding apart. Also that she, because she is young and she was cloned, she doesn't really have the background that a lot of other characters have, where she doesn't have support networks. She doesn't have strong relationships. So she's, there's going to be a lot of emphasis on her building friendships and possibly romantic, you know, relationships with other characters, the way that they're going to interact with her. There's the article shows a couple panels where Angel is like, wants to hug her and she's like regenerating from getting shot by a bazooka or something like that. And so she's like, well, it's not that I don't want you to hug me. It's that, my ribs are like mending right now. And if you hug me now, you might mess it up, kind of thing. I thought that was pretty funny and interesting. And so then the next panel is, she's like, really, you're going to pat me on the head? And he's like, was it awkward? And she's like, yeah, very awkward. So, you know, they're going to explore some of that stuff. I think this is going to be a good transition title for a lot of young women to read, because it's going to have a badass female character that is also going to be dealing with a lot of that kind of what we would consider teenage stuff, you know, like, even though I don't believe she's a teenager physically, you know, but mentally she probably still is, you know.
Right.
So I thought this was pretty cool. Like, at first, when I first saw the headline, I was like, I saw that it was a female Wolverine, and I didn't think of X-23 immediately. I was like, oh, God, do we have to gender bend every single character in Marvel? Female, like, Thor, I mean, come on. Right, yeah. And then I realized, oh, well, it's X-23. Oh, no, this makes perfect sense. This makes way more sense than Jane Foster. sorry. But, yeah.
You know, no, so it's true.
Yeah, I like it a lot. What are your guys' thoughts on it?
I like the idea too. I mean, I think eventually, of course, Wolverine's going to come back. And I think that this is their way of, or a good way of giving something for the fan, the Wolverine fans that that stave off their waiting. They're basically analyzing every, you know, crossover event, every major event as a way to bring back Wolverine. They can get away with not bringing back Wolverine for a while with X-23 kind of taking that role. And it sounds like it's not just a, all right, I'm the new Wolverine kind of thing. It's like you said, the adaptation of this character, learning what made Wolverine Wolverine and what he had to learn and what he had to adapt to for all the years that that we had him as a front and center Marvel character. So I think this is really cool. I'm excited to see what they do with it. Charles?
I am sick and tired of them giving me good stuff to read. I just don't have time for everything, Marvel. Could you please stop putting out great content between your movies and your games and your comics? How am I supposed to earn a living? Come on. Other than that, no, I think it's a great idea. I think it's interesting. I'm not sure. I understand there are certain things that are iconic in the universe, not for Marvel itself, but in the universe of Marvel, like Captain America. They had somebody else put on his costume after he died and all this other stuff. Like, okay, I kind of get it, but can we just let people die a little bit? And then my first impression of this was, why does she have to be Wolverine? Why can't she just be X-23? Because we know X-23's been in the universe before. Now, they may be rebooting it here for Marvel now. I'm not sure if it's...
It's the X-23 that's been mentored by Wolverine, by Logan. Yeah. So
okay. So she has been in the universe for a while. I don't understand exactly... And I'm going to read the comic when it comes out, but why do we have to have another Wolverine? Why can't we... be sad, let it go, and let her be X-23 doing her thing on the teams.
Sure.
You know, that's my only question, although I think it's going to be handled well.
Look at what they did with Ms. Marvel, with Kamala Khan. You know, there's another example of a younger character kind of taking a role that was previously held by another character, an adult character. In this case, it's a younger woman taking on an older woman's role. But it's introducing that character to a new audience in a new way, while that other character in this case doesn't die but kind of takes on this new Captain Marvel role. And I think it's, I don't know, I mean, it feels like a very similar thing to me from that. And I'm looking.
Well, I read the first 14 or 15 issues of the Kamala Khan Ms. Marvel. And the difference to me there is when Ms. Marvel is still alive doing her cosmic stuff. And she was like, oh, well, you know, I have these new powers. I don't know where they are. So I'm just going to kind of model myself after my hero. And this might be something similar.
This is.
What Wolverine's dead.
She's a clone of Logan. We'll see what happens. I mean, that's the thing. Like, that's the biggest thing. You know what I mean? Logan is the.
You're saying she's a chip off.
Well, no, but like Logan is the closest thing to an actual family that she has, as far as, you know, biologically, right? And he was a mentor to her. You know, he helped her learn the ropes, and so that's, you know, for her, this is assuming the mantle. You know, it's such a big deal. You know, which is one of the cases where I think it makes complete sense. I wasn't in love with the female Thor thing initially, but I got used to it and came to accept it. In this case, I think it's great. The moment I realized how they were doing it. The other thing I think that this does is this makes it a lot easier for, this is probably inadvertent on Marvel's part, but this makes it easy for Fox to solve the Wolverine problem in the next few years, because we know that Hugh Jackman can't do that role forever in the movies. So if they do a Death of Wolverine type event in one of the films, they can, in the meantime, potentially introduce a female character as X-23, female actress as X-23, and then fill that void going forward. So this is awesome for Fox, I think, inadvertently. You know what I mean?
Inadvertently. And this might happen in the next film, because Hugh Jackman has already said, because of those lines, because of all the work it takes for him to stay in Wolverine shape, that he's like, I'm getting too old for this. I'm kind of
He's.
Although he loves the character.
I've seen interviews with him where he said basically that he'll do this as long as he can, but there's a point where physically it's just going to become impossible.
Right. And I've heard, and maybe it's a twisting of that, but I've definitely heard that The I know it's gonna be a ton of work.
3 hours in the gym at least every day.
Jeez.
And that's even
the diet's even worse because like all you can eat is like chicken and rice. Like I've read articles about the diet that these guys go through for these films and the workout routines that they do, and it completely takes over their life, and it sucks. It takes all the joy out of like eating and living.
Sure.
Yeah. You've really got to want to do it. You know what I mean? So it's it's insane. Like it's really, really insane what they go through. The only people who pretty much go through more are people who are professional bodybuilders, and you know, they do it as a lifestyle. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, but you'll notice, like you look at Chris Hemsworth, for example, who gets all bulked up for Thor. And then you see him recently on SNL, for example, and he's way smaller than he was before. He's still very, you know, tight. Like he's still very toned and everything. And you can tell that. You can tell that like working out is still a big part of his life, but he doesn't have the physical mass that he has when he's playing Thor, you know, actively. So that's something to note, you know, is it.
Or the gorgeous hair. I've noticed that. He must have some great hairstylists for the movies because he's got great hair normally, but it's like, it's not Thor hair, though.
Those aren't luscious locks.
And I did notice in the previews for the Moby Dick movies, and Into the Deep, I think it's called, which apparently, I think it bombed because of the timing it was released against Star Wars. But apparently, unfortunately, that movie, has box office money-wise, has bombed. I noticed in the previews, he is way skinnier. He's way more like what you'd picture Captain Ahab to be, you know, average guy on the ship who doesn't eat very often versus, you know, Thor, God of Thunder. So I thought it was very interesting how working out and makeup and hair can really change a physical person and how it looks. Because he doesn't look unhealthy. He just isn't Thor, which is interesting. But on a side note, is anybody interested in seeing Into the Deep? Is that
I'd probably check it out. Yeah, I'll see it when it comes around.
Yeah. And I think that's unfortunately what a lot of people have said when it hits Netflix, when it comes around, which is sad because things like that can hurt an actor's career. Well, now you have to be Thor or you won't make money. And that's not cool.
It depends if this film is a critical and like art film success.
Yeah, if he wins like best actor.
I mean, if it gets nods from the various awards. Right. Then he'll be okay. And it'll be like, all right, well, he did that quiet flick that didn't do so well box office wise, but it was a really good performance. I mean, there's lots of people who have done that. But that doesn't necessarily save a career either. I mean, look at what happened to, what's his name? Adrian, the guy who did the piano.
Oh, Adrian Brody?
Adrian Brody, was showing every signs of like rocketing up to the top of, you know, being A-list celebrity, you know, getting cast for everything. And he did a series of really strong artistic performances. He got, not, I believe he's a Oscar winner for his performance in The Piano. And then he has all but disappeared off the face of the planet the last few years. We talked about this on a previous show at some point. He's just like, he's doing B movies now. And I don't know why. I imagine it's probably something behind the scenes that none of us really know about. So like, it can go either way. You know what I mean?
Yeah, he did, I believe I'm correct in saying Adrian Brody did The Village, M. Night Shyamalan's The Village. And then the last thing I remember seeing him in, I know he's been in other stuff, I forgot what he's in more recently, was Aliens versus Predator 2.
No. Like, he was in...
I really hope for that.
He was in Predators, not AVP.
Predators.
Yeah, that was the one with Fishburne. Okay. And, sorry. Yeah. That was actually a fine film.
Yeah. Okay.
Robert Rodriguez, I believe, either produced it or directed it. It was a good, pretty good Predator film, but it was like, it was ill-timed because it just was like, there was no hype for it at the time, you know? It came out and it was pretty good, but like nobody talked about it. So,
Adrian, come be in the Marvel Universe. Who'd
he be? What big nose awesome superheroes do we have that need a, need a role?
The Vulture.
Right, there we go.
Oh, yeah.
And Adrian was the first name. It was Adrian Toomes was the Vulture. So perfect casting.
Hey, Marvel, if you need a casting director, I'm your guy.
I think he'd play a good villain. I definitely do think he'd play a great villain and not a superhero. Which MCU cast brought up on our giant-sized team. Oh, by the way, there was a giant-sized team-up, oversized podcast done for Jessica Jones, where all the different shows that we have, except for Kingfisher, were represented there. We had 7 hosts and did over an hour in spoiler-filled review of Jessica Jones as a whole. So you guys should go check that out. But that was brought up then that there's very few great villains in the Marvel Cinematic Universe right now. Kingfisher being a great villain, but Kingpin being the villain I was trying to say. Of course, Purple Man from Jessica Jones was a great villain, and Loki. Other than that, they're all kind of mediocre, ho-hum villains, and we need more. So, anything else on that article?
No, that's about it for that one.
All right. Well, the one thing tease I want to say is as I'm watching Star Wars, and I could not get past how much Daisy Ridley reminded me of Hayley Atwell. And I like, she has to play Sharon Carter in something coming up. Because we don't really need a Peggy Carter flashback, because when Peggy Carter was young, she wasn't doing it.
Exactly. Stuff. Well, we've got a Sharon Carter already in the universe. She's Agent really? 13 Who's that we've seen in the Winter Soldier.
Yeah. Winter Soldier. I thought you were gonna say Agents of Shield.
No. She was in. It's the blonde woman who lives near Steve Rogers in the apartment.
Sharon Carter?
Agent 13.
I totally missed that little tidbit there. I mean, I knew she was agent, and I caught Agent 13, which I forget to attach to Sharon Carter herself. Does she say she's Sharon?
Yes. Yeah. It's Emily Van Camp, and she does say she's Sharon Carter.
Well, I'm sorry, Emily.
But I'm with you. I'd like to, you know, I think Daisy, after seeing Star Wars, I think Daisy Ridley belongs in everything. But,
well, yeah. But I mean, she's absolutely a great tie to Hayley.
She does have a very, yeah, you're right. She has kind of a young Hayley Atwell look to her.
So I will, okay, Disney, Marvel, I will make this concession. When you finally reveal who her character's mother is, make Hayley Atwell play it.
There we go. Right.
Please. I will take that.
Nice.
So she was great. And one last thing. I know we got to get out of here. I know we got one more segment, but I really want to hit this just for Ibbit himself. You've professed to be an iZombie fan.
Of the three CW comic adaptation shows, it's the one I don't keep up with the most, but I do like it.
Well, here's your reason to get back into it. Kristen Bell to guest on iZombie, possibly in an erotic role. With quotes. She'll be guest starring on an upcoming episode of CW's iZombie, according to Entertainment Weekly. Bell will debut on January 26th episode titled 50 Shades of Grey Matter in a voiceover part.
So she's probably, she'll probably be dead and she'll, you know, be reading Liv Moore will be reading on or reading her books or something.
Yeah, so she'll be taking on the memories of librarian who moonlighted as an erotic fiction writer. Yeah, sounds like Bell could provide the narration of the author reading the passages from her stories. So it'll be interesting. And apparently showrunner Rob Thomas worked with her on Veronica Mars, which was a show I never watched. But, yeah, I was hoping for actually screen time.
She'd probably get screen time. I guess not, right? She won't be the cadaver that is laying on the gurney.
No, probably not.
That's a little outside of Kristen Bell's pay scale now that Frozen's come and gone.
I mean, if some of her great comedies, like Forgetting Sarah Marshall, didn't jack her up in the pay scale.
Right. She Frozen started out in Hero. Well, not started out, but I mean, she was...
Heroes. She was in Heroes.
Back when it was good.
Yep.
Ooh, sick burn.
Yeah.
Well, no, it wasn't really intended as like a stab. I think it's well established that.
The Heroes Reborn, I'm not sure if it's going to come back from the break. I like it. It's going to interesting places that could be great, but I don't know where it's going, and it's going there very slowly. So, yeah, it's fair enough. All right. 2015 best and worst of this year. Klotz.
Somebody else go. I'll come back later.
Since I threw this idea out, why don't I go first? Worst is Marvel's everything on the surface points to it, but there's never been anything officially established decision to phase out all of their mutant and Fantastic Four based characters and comics because of the ownership of their properties by other movie studios. You know, these things, these characters started out as great comic book characters, and from Marvel to prove that they're really looking at the bottom line of the movies with these characters and the money that they make from promoting them in their comics is just such a bummer because, at least in the case of the mutants, it's a yeah. loss on Marvel's part that they're doing this, that they're focusing so much on the bottom line to take these out.
And to be honest, kind of bad form.
It is bad form. Marvel.
You know, when you first did it with Fantastic Four, I was like, yeah, okay, it's kind of funny. Screw Fox. It
so much.
But now you're taking, well, it's not that I didn't mind. I was in the moment, you know, of going, oh, you're treating it poorly. And I still believe they treated the property poorly, but I think they're treating X-Men well. So I was in the moment, like, you know, Fox was actually kind of being dicks at the time. I don't remember what they were doing, but they were kind of poking the bear of Marvel. Marvel poked back with the swipe of Deadpool dropping many whales on top of them. That's a reference to Puzzle Quest.
Because I didn't recognize it.
So, yeah, that's a reference to Puzzle Quest. If you play Puzzle Quest, it's an obscure reference there. So by killing the entirety of Fantastic Four and not letting them be in the universe anymore. But come on, Marvel. You're taking out beloved characters. You're messing with an established pillar of what makes you successful.
It is bad
That's
form.
Just bad form.
How about a positive, though? One of the best things of 2015, comic book and comic book movie related, was the unpredicted joy I got from Ant-Man, from finally seeing that on screen, and how, you know, Avengers 2 met my expectations. Maybe you didn't quite meet, but came close to meeting my expectations. But any expectations I had for Ant-Man were far exceeded by the fun I had in that movie. So comic book wise, that's my favorite thing from 2015.
All right. So I am going to have to go with my, I know I'm judging properties without watching them. So that's the worst of 2015. No. The worst of 2015 is the fact that I, as a show host on a comic book show, am judging things without actually watching them. That would be the worst. I still feel like Fantastic Four is going to be bad and Supergirl is going to be bad, but I am going to stop bashing them until I actually see them.
You know what? You can see it for 99 cents from a Redbox machine. That's about the, until it's on the free, and there's, you know, so no such thing as free streaming with Netflix or Hulu.
Right.
But for 99 cents, I can almost see watching it.
I will. I will take the bullet for the show because I have been called out more than a few times. And I still stand by the fact that I'm pretty adamant in the fact that it just looks like crap to me. There's nothing attractive to this. And it offends me when I see the Marvel logo pop up. I'm like, never mind. You know, because I'm watching. I'm like, this one is not Marvel. It is, but it's not. It's not a Marvel-owned, done property. It's Fox-done property. But I will. I vow for 2016 to stop judging things without seeing them. I'll give some hesitancies, but I'll stop bashing. So the best thing for 2015 for me, hands down, I was going to partially say Ant-Man because I was so thrilled by that and wasn't sure how that was going to go. You took that one, but I was still leaning towards Deadpool. Even though it hasn't been released, the trailers done in Red Band fashion, the little promos to say, hey, trailers are coming. Just everything about the marketing of this movie has been done so right for me. It's given me so many squee moments above how excited I've gotten about Star Trek, Star Wars, Avengers, Ant-Man, all that stuff that's happened this year. Daredevil and Jessica Jones. I've been so excited. The handling of Daredevil's marketing to the T suits the character 1,000%. It's just, that's to me the highlight of comic books in this year. And a second, close second, is the Kamala Khan, bringing not only a female new character, but an Arabic new character, a Muslim female new character. And the way they've handled it was so well done. And it wasn't a replacement. It wasn't a gender bending. It wasn't a retcon. It was a new character with a new storyline. And it, I liked it. It was great. So thank you. I'm not sure if Cloud hit the run.
I'm here. I'm going to give you my answers, okay, and then I am going to take off. Not feeling well suddenly. I apologize, folks.
At home.
I would say best of the year, definitely Daredevil and Jessica Jones, the way they were handled completely. They were fantastic. They proved that streaming is legitimate television, that they can put out legitimate shows, they can release it all at once and do amazing storytelling. And then I'm going to agree with McFall on Fantastic Flop being the worst of the year. Even though I haven't seen it, the fact that I didn't care to see it speaks volumes.
Sure.
So, yeah, that's my best and worst of the year.
All right. Cool. Well, you can now find us on iTunes. We are listed there, so subscribe to the show. Coming up January 1st, which actually will be before we release this episode. So, hey, now you can go to GiantSizeTeamUp.com and see. It is woo. Where we're going, we don't need iPods. But GiantSizeTeamUpNetwork.com is where you can find all the great shows in our network. We are the flagship show, and you can find us at... Well, it's going to be through Giant Size Team Up Network. You go there, you click on it, or it's GiantSizeTeamUpNetwork.com.
GiantSizeTeamUp.com. Let's get it. Let's get it right.
Thank you. I get so excited. I get so squeezed and so fast. GiantSizeTeamUp.com /breakingthepanel. Or, of course, we'll have the logo there. You can click it, subscribe to iTunes, share us with your friends. We've had a great interview with Mike Zapsik. We're going to have some more great interviews coming up this year. A lot of amazing things doing. And you know what? We're going to go ahead and time travel and go to what was the best of 2016? The fact that we lost our network.
There you go.
And it's amazing. Yes. That was the best. So check it out. Of course, find more of Ibit over at coverville.com. Find me at charlesmcfall.com. Klotz is coming up with some new shows this year. That's going to be an amazing thing to do. So, big, huge family. Check out GiantSizeTeamUp.com. It's fun. It's going to be great. It's going to change how you take on podcasting.
That's it for
anything
me.
Else, sir? All right. Well, we're out. Check us again next week as we drop new shows.
Bye now.